This is Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom.
Hello and welcome to Answers UK Radio. My name's Paul Taylor, I'm the Senior Speaker with Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom. And this is the radio magazine programme podcast, which talks about Genesis, creation and evolution. This is episode 18 and you're very welcome to join us. In episode 17 we were talking about climate change and the idea of anthropogenic global warming. And on that subject we spoke to Dr. Cal Beisner of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. And we found out that Dr. Beisner had done a lot of work on the subject. The Cornwall Alliance is an organisation of theologians and scientists. We found out that Dr. Beisner had put together the policy documents on evangelicals and climate change, and that he had been at the Copenhagen summit recently. And it was fascinating to talk to him, but there was just too much information to be able to put into one programme. So we're going to have part two of the interview in this particular program. That will be coming up shortly. In the second part of the program, we're going to talk about media. We're going to talk about some of the exciting new developments that there are going to be to do with broadcasting media, with Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom and Europe. So do stay tuned for that. And if you've got any comments, any ideas, comments, anything you'd like to say to us, then please send us an email. The email address is radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. That's radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. And we'll talk, and then at the end of the program, after the commercial break, we'll talk about media and the different ways that we can use to get the message of creation and Genesis across. Well, now we'll return to the interview with Dr. Cal Beisner. And in the second part of this interview, we were starting to talk about the so-called Climate Gate scandal, where there were some emails obtained and some information obtained from the Climate Research Unit at the University of East Anglia. And I asked Dr. Beisner, first of all, in this part of the interview, I asked him if there was a particular agenda in mind that the Climate Research Unit and the people involved in that had got when they were that sort of influenced the way that they were talking in their emails.
Well, I think actually there are probably a good number of different sorts of agendas involved in this. One, for example, would be the population control agenda. There are many, many people in the environmentalist movement who believe that the world is seriously overpopulated, that the Earth cannot sustain the present human population and certainly can't sustain a larger one, and that therefore we need to do population control. Well, since energy is at the very root of how we meet human needs, if we can persuade people that we're using too much energy, that we need to get away from the cheapest and most readily available forms of energy, the fossil fuels and nuclear, then we can rob humanity of that basic support of human life. And that, in turn, can, theoretically anyway, slow population growth. The sad thing is that that rests on a fundamental notion of humanity that is unbiblical. That notion sees people as fundamentally consumers and polluters,
yes.
Whereas Scripture teaches us that because we are made in the image of God,
yes.
We can be creative and productive, and we can be good stewards under God, and can make more than we consume in our lifetimes, which is actually borne out by economic history, by the simple fact that typically each generation bequeaths to the next more than it inherited from the prior. That's part of the agenda. Another
yes.
part is that, frankly, a lot of the environmentalist movement still embraces its thought when it was formerly a part of the socialist movement.
Yes.
And the control of the use of energy would be one of the most intrusive and comprehensive forms of government control of life
yes.
Ever to come about. It can only be established, it can only be sustained by a minute control of every aspect of our lives by our governments.
Yes.
So that would be part of the agenda as well.
Yes. It's interesting, actually, what you were saying there about the background of many of the people involved in the environmental movement. I think I heard somebody describe them as being rather like a watermelon, green on the outside, but you cut it open and it's red on the inside.
Yes.
But perhaps because of the way that...
I could give you one good example of that would be Dr. Michael Northcutt, who is a leading international ethicist and authored the book Environmental and Christian Ethics, which is used very, very widely around the world in teaching this stuff. He is a professor of ethics at the University of Edinburgh and a priest in the Scottish Episcopal Church.
Yes.
His book, A Moral Climate, The Ethics of Global Warming, is essentially a brief for Marxism.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's very clear that Dr. Northcutt has been seeking worldwide redistribution of wealth ever since the 1970s. He's done it for a number of different rationales, and his embrace of global warming alarmism is simply another example in his embrace of reasons to redistribute wealth around the world.
Yes. Well, while we're on that particular subject, that leads me neatly, really, onto asking about something which I know is very close to your heart, because the way that many people have been led to believe in this country with the work that's being done, or rather the opinions being propagated by certain so-called Christian charitable organizations, is that really... getting global warming down, cutting carbon dioxide emissions and so on, is about protecting the poor. And they might say to you, well, look, Carl, what did you, don't you really care about the poor? What have you got to say to that point? Because I know this is something you believe very strongly on, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it is precisely because of that that I am involved in this work at all. What I am convinced is that global average temperature changes, and nobody, frankly, experiences global average temperature. We experience
no.
specific temperatures in specific places.
Yes.
And we live in everything from the Arctic Circle to the Sahara Desert.
Yes.
Humanity is enormously adaptable to temperatures, and so is the rest of the Earth.
Yes.
We know that from geologic history. But global average temperatures are not a significant threat to either the poor or the wealthy around the world by comparison with poverty. And poverty is absolutely, without a doubt, the greatest predictor of disease and premature death. The poor are far more vulnerable to every risk,
yes.
whether of severe weather or of insect-borne diseases or of accidents, or of just simple, ordinary illnesses that are transmitted, like the common cold or influenza
yes.
or anything else. The poor are more vulnerable to every risk precisely because they are poor.
Yes.
Now, there is a very, very clear, powerful correlation between the use of energy and economic development. That is, in order to develop economically, a society must have abundant and affordable energy.
Yes.
And with present technologies and the technologies that can be foreseen within the next, say, 30 to 50 years, the most abundant and affordable energy sources are nuclear and the fossil fuels,
yes.
oil, coal, and natural gas. If we force the reduced use of those, then if we are to substitute some other energy sources, they are going to be more expensive.
Yes.
Here in the United States, last summer, the House of Representatives passed a bill to impose a cap and trade scheme on United States industries to reduce CO2 emissions. The estimate is, by most of the economic forecasting firms that ran models on this, the general consensus among the economists is that if that were to become law, it would increase the direct energy costs of the average American family of four by about $1,200 per year.
Right.
It would increase the indirect energy costs, that's the energy part of the cost of everything else you buy, food, clothing,
food,
shelter,
yes,
anything, by about another $3,400 per year. So it would increase costs together by about $4,600 per year.
Right.
Now, that would hit the poor hardest.
Yes.
But, you know, in the United States, even our poor are rich by comparison with the average people in the developing world.
Yes.
And to greatly increase the cost of energy for the developing world is murder. It is to condemn those societies to additional generations of abject poverty and high rates of disease and premature death. And that, I think, is unconscionable.
Yes. While claiming to be on the side of the poor, the global warming advocates are quite often against the poor, and are almost, if I dare use such a word, displaying a sort of almost colonial attitude in saying that the things that we did to get our nations out of poverty with the use of fossil fuels, we're going to deny to developing nations now who could start to take advantage of those because of a particular agenda that we've got.
Yes, and that, by the way, is precisely why I think there is very little likelihood that the United Nations will ever be able to adopt a global treaty for truly global drastic reductions in the use of fossil fuels and the emission of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. The developing countries of the world know perfectly well that they must have abundant and affordable electricity and other forms of energy if they are to climb out of poverty. They are not about to give up that hope. They realize that the people's lives depend on it. And so consequently, Copenhagen fell apart. There was no substantive agreement to come out of Copenhagen. And, of course, the UN is going to try again in Mexico City this year, and I have every expectation that that will fall apart as well. It won't if people sit around and do nothing, so those of us who understand this need to keep our voices up.
Yes.
But there's strong reaction against this in the developing world. India, China, Brazil, South Africa, other countries have made it very clear that they're not going to go along with anything that would further impoverish and prolong the impoverishment of their people.
Well, you were in Copenhagen at the time of the summit, weren't you? And would you be able to give us a little bit of an impression of some of the sort of things that you saw there? What was your impression of how things went there?
Well, I suppose one could remark first on the utter inability of the United Nations leadership to organize a simple conference of about 50,000 people. They credentialed 45,000 people to sit in on the proceedings, and that was for a facility that had a maximum capacity of 15,000. That was not exactly the brightest bulb on the planet that figured that out. And the result was utter chaos and enormous antagonism developing between the UN leaders and the leaders in the rank and file alike of the non-governmental organizations who had come there, thousands of them, flying from all around the world, of course, burning enormous amounts of fossil fuel and putting a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as they did so. But they wound up at each other's throats because of this. Now, these are the very same people who tell us that they would like us to trust them to organize the world's energy systems and essentially plan the world's economy. They can't even conduct a conference, for crying out loud. I mean, this, I think, is ridiculous. Now, one also was able to see, marching in the streets, the scores of thousands of protesters, and the most widely seen flags there were the flags of the Communist Party
yes.
and the International Socialist Youth.
Yes.
I engaged many, many people in conversations on the street and in buildings and so on during the week that I was there, the second week of the conference, and I found that the vast majority of them knew nothing whatsoever about the science of
yes.
global warming. They knew nothing whatsoever whatsoever about the economics. They were there because they wanted to, as they put it, change the system, not the planet.
Yes.
And what they meant by that was get rid of capitalism and free enterprise
yes.
and usher in socialism instead.
Yes.
They were there for political reasons, not for scientific or economic reasons. The only exception I found to that, actually, by the way, was a British scientist who was working with a Danish environmental agency. And as we spoke together after a talk by Dr. Pachauri, the head of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, as we spoke and we got into talking about the science itself, and I gave him a basic reason for thinking that climate sensitivity, that is, how much warming could be expected from increased CO2, was actually very slight, not very large, as is assumed by the IPCC.
Yes.
He agreed with me.
Yes.
And yet, he was still promoting global warming alarm.
Yes, which of course shows that it isn't really down to the science at the end of the day.
Yeah, it really doesn't have much to do with the science
yes.
at the end of the day. It all has to do with these other agendas.
Yes, I mean, Scripture tells us that when we think about climate change, Scripture tells us in Genesis chapter 8, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease.
Exactly, and that is God's promise. And we find many places in the Scriptures that speak, for example, of God setting a boundary for the sea that it cannot cross.
Yes.
This in Jeremiah 25, for example, where God makes it clear that the reason people come to fear natural disasters is that they don't fear God. And so, not fearing God, they come to change their worship for the Creator to a worship of the creature. And when they do that, God gives them over to a depraved mind, as the Apostle Paul tells us in Romans chapter 1. And then, professing themselves to be wise, they become fools.
Yes.
This is what really lies at the root of all of this confusion, is the rejection of the God who created this universe and made it wisely, so that it is robust, not fragile, as is assumed by all environmentalism, so that it is self-regulating and self-correcting, so that it is not going to be knocked into utter chaos by a change in atmospheric chemistry in which CO2 goes from 27 ten-thousandths to 39 ten-thousandths of 1% of the atmosphere. That just doesn't fit a biblical worldview.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Bisney, you've given us a great deal of food for thought. I hope our listeners will be paying attention to that. And as we've said a couple of times, they can find the information that you've been talking about at your website, cornwallalliance.org. Cornwall Alliance, as in Cornwall, the county, or country, as they would like to call themselves,
well, actually,
in Cornwall. Cornwall Alliance?
No, it's not related to that. It's actually related to the little village of West Cornwall, Connecticut, where
right.
back in 1999, a group of about 30 of us who are theologians and pastors and scientists and economists working on a biblical ethic of environmental stewardship gathered together, and we
yes.
drafted what we wound up calling the Cornwall Declaration on Environmental Stewardship.
I was meaning that it was spelt the same as Cornwall, the county, so that people would know.
Yes.
and I hasten to add for our listeners that you were not there in 1899 when it was
was
put together.
No, I wasn't.
So thank you very much indeed for your time and for all the things there that we need to think about. Dr. Bisney, thank you so
much. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Paul. It was my pleasure and my privilege.
Here's Dr. Jason Lyle talking about his new book.
Well, the reason I wanted to write this book is because I've heard a lot of creationists using arguments that really aren't very cogent, or at least they're not decisive. They don't really prove what the creationist is trying to establish. And I've also learned that there is a very powerful way of defending the Christian faith, an argument that is decisive, is conclusive, and I've been using this argument for a few years now, and I've never had anyone be able to come back from it. And I thought, you know, Christians really need to learn this argument because it's very, very powerful. And so I basically wrote a book explaining how to use what I call the ultimate proof of creation.
Supplement this important book. You can now get The Ultimate Proof of Creation on DVD, priced £10, from 0116-270-8400. Welcome back. You're listening to episode 18 of Answers UK Radio with me, Paul Taylor. Well, in this part of the program, we're going to have a look at some of the media, the new media that can be used, and I'm going to float with you some ideas that we've got for the use of new media in getting the information out to you. The idea perhaps 10 years ago or 15 years ago of doing some sort of radio program for an organization like this would have been really quite laughable. It would have been far too difficult for us to organize, and there would have been all sorts of restrictions in trying to get involved in conventional radio stations. So the use of media over the internet has just radicalized that, and of course the whole use of podcasting systems, RSS feeds, various methods of syndication, they've just helped tremendously with the ability to produce programs to get the information out. So we hope that you've been enjoying these podcasts that we produce. Remember, there are two podcasts that you can get hold of. There's the Answers UK Radio podcast that you're listening to at the moment, and there's the Answers UK Ministry podcast, in which you get portions of ministry from people associated with Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom. Well, let me float past you three ideas that we've got for use of new media, and I want some response back, please. And there's an email address that we've got that you'll be able to use to give response back on each of these three ideas. The email address is radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. That's radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. Well, the first thing I'd like to look at is that there are facilities, in fact, on the internet for being able to produce live radio programs, which could be talk programs in which people could be able to participate. So is there a need for a live program? One or two people have asked about this, you know, can people participate in the programs? And maybe if there are enough of you who are interested, we could produce a live program. There's a system called blogtalkradio.com, and it's very easy to use that to listen to a live radio. You can get a radio stream. If I put a box for that site on the website, then when it is the appropriate time for the broadcast, you could listen to that stream from the website. Or if you registered with blogtalkradio.com yourself, then you could actually join in with the program, because people could call the program. Now, you can actually call by telephone, but that would be rather expensive, because this is an American service, and for our UK listeners it would be expensive anyway. Maybe if some of you are American listeners, you'd find that quite useful. But it's mostly it's an American service, and most of our listeners are from the United Kingdom. So that would be a little bit complex, and there's no similar organisation hosting such things in the United Kingdom. So it's a good service to use. However, if you have one of these headsets and you can plug that into your computer, then you can actually call the programme directly from a web page. So, with that in mind, we could actually have a full talk radio discussion program. It would be broadcast live, and people could call in through the website, through a system similar to Skype, really, and join in the discussion. So let us know if you think that would be a good idea. The programs get recorded automatically and then they also become available as podcasts once they've been broadcast. They're available then for people to download after the event. So they're not lost, they're in place. But let us know if you think that would be something you'd be interested in taking part in. The idea of a program, a live discussion program, Answers UK Live. We can produce that, as I said, through blogtalkradio.com, and we could build that up, put it on the Answers UK podcast website so people can get to it easily and simply. Well, that's the first suggestion, so if you want to comment on that, then please email us at radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. That's radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. Well, the second new media system that we're getting to use is called Cinch. Cinch is spelled C-I-N-C-H. Confusingly, the website is cinchcast.com, C-I-N-C-H-C-A-S-T.com. So that's cinchcast.com. And we've got a website on their site, a page on their site, and that would be at cinchcast.com/answersuk. So you've heard that quite a bit. Now, what actually is it? Well, it's produced by Blog Talk Radio, and it's a sort of audio version of Twitter. If you're familiar with Twitter, you can just produce a quick comment that then gets sent out, and people who are following you, that always sounds ominous to me, but it just means people who've said that they want to receive your Twitters or Twitterings or whatever you call them, they can follow them, they can read those comments, and it's a very simple and easy system to use. Well, so is Cinchcast, but in the case of Cinchcast, it's actually an audio system. You can put a little typed comment as well, but it's mostly for little audio broadcasts of 1 or 2 minutes. You can record these through a microphone, through your computer, or you can do it through a mobile phone, particularly if you've got a mobile phone such as the iPhone. The iPhone, in fact, has a Cinchcast application, so that you can easily record a little cinch, that's what they're calling these little broadcasts. You could record a cinch and upload it straight away from the iPhone. So it is quite useful, and we thought we would have a go at using it to see if it was useful for people to put together small soundbite comments that we could then collect and use in our main podcast. So cinchcast.com works in a very similar way to Twitter. You could start your own account through that, and then you could label yourself as a follower of Answers UK by looking at cinchcast.com/AnswersUK. And having done that, we'd be able to find your cinches that you'd produced, and we'd be able to download them, and we'd be able to incorporate them into the main podcast. So just have a go at seeing if that works, and if you have any comments on that, if you want any advice on that, or you want to comment on the whole idea of using cinches in that way, then please do contact us at radio@answersingenesis.org.uk. I should mention, by the way, that cinches have been designed so that when you've produced them, you can, if you like, simultaneously post a link to Twitter through your Twitter account, and also you can simultaneously post a link through to your Facebook account as well. So that's quite a useful thing to be able to do. And remember that Answers UK has already got pages on Facebook. We've got two pages. We've got a special page for Answers in Genesis UK Europe. So you can have a look at that, and you can become a fan of that page. And there's also a page for the Answers UK podcasts, so have a look for that. The easiest thing to do, I think, is to have a look at the aukpodcast.com website and find the links to the appropriate Facebook pages through that. So, we've mentioned two types of media then so far. Do you want to have a live talk show discussion program? Do you want to use cinches to provide little sound bites that we might be able to use? The third one, I think, is probably the most exciting, and really we need to get into this, which is the whole idea of video podcasting. Just like this podcast is analogous to a radio program, it works like a radio program, we could do the same sort of thing as a TV program. But there's some advantages to this now, because it doesn't just have to be downloaded to use on a computer. You see, there's some very exciting new products around that are enabling people to be able to get hold of these video podcasts, or vodcasts, as some people are calling them, and to be able to run them through your standard television set. There are several methods on the market already of doing this that some of you may have without even realizing. You can attach your computer direct to the to your television. Many modern flat-screen TFT televisions and plasma televisions and so on have got facilities for taking signals reasonably easily from your computer. I didn't buy this with this in mind when I bought my newest computer, but I have discovered that it has actually got an HD output, so that an HD cable can run into the television to get signals straight from the computer. Other methods, some of you may have games consoles, particularly I notice that the Wii does something with internet television. Now, the Wii is quite an interesting little device. It's this Wii Fit thing that really gets me. The whole idea of exercising with a computer console. I love that, this Wii Fit thing. I could sit and watch people using that for hours. But I noticed that there are channels on the Wii for interactive channels for getting hold of the internet and downloading programs, podcasts and vodcasts in particular. So that's a way of doing things. You could get hold of any television program we're able to produce, and you could download it through your Wii, and you could watch it at your leisure whenever you feel like watching it. There are other systems. For example, there's a box called Apple TV. That comes from Apple, the makers of iPhone and iPods. And it's really like a sort of big, well, it's a little brick, really, that does some of the same things as an iPod. But you attach this to your television. It's got a large hard drive on it, and it has a version of their famous iTunes software on it, so that you can find vodcasts, and for that matter ordinary podcasts and also other videos and so on. You can find those things and you can get them downloaded onto this box and played through the TV. I do know that there are other systems likely to be coming on the market soon as well. These are not the only ones, but I notice that those are possibilities that are available right now. So the whole idea of being able to get television programs from Answers in Genesis in the United Kingdom is a very strong reality. Now, the thing is, we need a little bit of equipment to be able to do this. It's not vast equipment, it's not hugely expensive equipment. We've got a little bit of the equipment already, but I've worked out that we really need one very good camcorder to be able to record the video. That's got to have remote access to microphones so that we can get good sound quality with it, and we need some video editing software. And having priced all of that up, it comes to between about £2,000 and £3,000, so it's not hugely expensive, but in these days of credit crunch, it's very difficult to find such money lying around in the corners of our accounts. So I'm just putting it to you to see if any of you could prayerfully consider helping us with this. If you'd be interested in giving a donation towards us being able to purchase this sort of equipment, then please call us, make a donation, and mark the donation as Media Fund. Now, I should say, for the sake of all the legal niceties, that if we get far more than the amount that's mentioned, then we would like to be able to use the excess into our normal general fund. But we're talking about trying to get somewhere approaching £3,000 so that we can get the equipment. It's not a hugely expensive thing to do, but we'd like to be able to get the equipment so that we can start producing television programs. We'll probably start with short 10-minute episodes of a magazine style format, similar to the radio program but obviously shorter. We'll put those together and we'll make them available, and we've got another avenue there where we can get out the message about creation, evolution and Genesis. So we've had three different media ideas. If you've got comments about the last one there, again, please contact us by email, radio@ at answersingenesis.org.uk. That's radio at answersingenesis.org.uk. The three new ideas altogether for you to comment on are the possibility of live radio talk show broadcasts. The second one is the idea of using cinchcast.com to produce short sound bites that we might all be able to use together and share together. And the third one is the possibility of what would really amount to television shows by podcast. That is a vodcast, video podcast, and we need to raise money for equipment for that last one. So all very exciting ideas. It's been great to be able to talk to you in this episode, and we've got some wonderful things coming up in episode 19. In episode 19, we're hoping to be able to have an interview with Answers in Genesis' Director of Research, Dr. Andrew Snelling, about his wonderful historic new book, Earth's Catastrophic Past. So I'll be talking to Dr. Snelling about that book and explaining why it is such an exciting book, why it is so important. It really is important. It's the most important new creationist book to come out, really. It's on a level with the old book by John Whitcomb and Henry Morris, The Genesis Flood. That's not an idle claim, as you'll see when we have the interview with Dr. Snelling, but that's coming up in episode 19. So as always, please remember to keep your podcasting software up to date. You can find us through iTunes. You can find us at aukpodcast.com. You can contact us, radio at answersingenesis.org.uk. You can buy products that you know about or that you heard about on this program by contacting us on 0116 270 8400. That's 0116 270 8400. Or you can go through the website, remembering to change the link at the top of the page from United States to United Kingdom, so that you can get into our web store and you can buy products in pounds sterling. So thank you for listening to us. Until next time, goodbye. God bless.